toured around Australia. They gathered from far and near to listen to old mate Liam on the radio, loud and clear.
There was a movement called Technocracy Incorporated. It led up to a formal organization being created in 1934, but the organization Technocracy Incorporated, they believed that because technology had entered the world, that the fabric of society had fundamentally changed, and therefore politicians were unable, if not incapable, completely of running society correctly. And
the year is 2017. You're rushed to a hospital, unconscious with no ID or medical history, but thanks to a microchip under your skin, it's all there. Science fiction 20 years ago, but a biometric reality today.
This is a developmental system made by MC10, and it has an antenna and some sensors embedded in it. And what we plan to do is work with them to advance a tattoo that could be used for authentication.
You ready to open a new smartphone? I registered your visit with Slick Travel Corp the other day, so they've allotted you a journey time to match mine.
There's been a huge push by energy companies working in conjunction with the government to install smart meters. What's a smart meter? Well, it's an electric meter that energy corporations allege will streamline how power consumption is monitored in your home.
They have a whole lot of little graphs that tell you on an hourly basis how much energy you're using. I show that to the family. I said, you see this spike? That means a lot of money, so let's bring that spike down. Our family now is trained. We're not using them.
Because these devices are also capable of controlling, regulating, and even rationing your energy use.
So put the billy on, Australia. You gather around that radio and come join the resistance. It's a Fair Dinkum radio show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us once again for another edition of Technocracy News. And I'm joined by our friend Patrick Wood in the United States. Patrick, welcome along.
Welcome. Glad to be here, Leon. Thanks for putting this on. Let's get at it. This is
okay.
Good stuff.
Well, we've got four really good segments here today. To begin with, we're looking at Australia to trial cloud passports in world first move. Now, the idea is that this is a move towards world ID, moving into biometrics. And the only way that we could have cloud passports is obviously to identify the individual by other biometric measures, right? Either through their eyes, fingerprints, or RFID chips to come. Now, the interesting thing about this story is this locks into the UN Agenda 2030 with their aim to provide a global ID for every individual on the earth. But Pat, the interesting thing is that Nigeria is already moving in this direction. Nigeria's government has confirmed it will link national ID cards to a biometrics-backed banking ID number created to prevent fraud. So Patrick, here is a further move into the biometrics, the RFID identification, slated by the globalists and indeed the Trilateral Commission, and many of the different bodies working towards technocracy.
It's quite doomed to fail, in my opinion, because there's nothing in the internet realm that cannot be hacked. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Anything that goes online is hackable and modifiable by bad guys. And it's a nice dream, but I hate to say the people, and I have some background in information science, So at least I kind of understand the issues, even if I can't do everything myself. The people that are proposing this sort of thing, they don't understand the technology that they're dealing with. They really don't. If they did, they would never even consider such a harebrained scheme.
It's interesting, Pat, we've spoken in the past about how Australia is a test case for many of these different globalist initiatives, and another story we'll get to later about the removal of cash. But our second story is the irrational war on carbon towards 2015 climate change summit in Paris. Now, this coincides with new statistics of we the people becoming very sceptical about this climate change agenda. From the new American, climate alarmists are in panic mode because the public isn't buying their spin anymore. Recent data in Australia proves that over 50% of the people basically do not believe that any climate change is related to man-made activities. How do you see this is going, Pat?
You know, it's funny that that nations are actually looking at pulling out of the climate change summit in Paris at this point. And they're sensing that they're going to get fleeced again. They should, because it's you know, when will you learn, right? They have been fleeced so many times before, they're starting to smell the same stench of death again. And they're saying, wait a minute, who's going to pay for all this stuff? And, you know, who's the brunt of this? And they're getting the idea. Unfortunately, the public in any one of these countries has never had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. What we believe and think is immaterial and irrelevant in these people's eyes. But, but I have to say, the United Nations and Christiana Figueres in particular, who's going to be running this meeting upcoming in Paris, she's sweating right now. Because, in fact, I heard her state in a press conference just 4 or 5 days ago that if they don't pull it together in December, like they think they are going to, if they don't pull it together, it will take us 10 to 15 years to regain the momentum that we have now. That's good news to me. I say, yeah, I hope the whole meeting will melt down on them and nations will just walk out and say, we're not staying around anymore.
Yeah, pardon the pun about melting ice, right, with a melting meeting. But our opposition leader here in Australia, Bill Shorten, has just completed this trip of Pacific Island atolls, and the idea was to sort of create a narrative within the Australian media that these islands are sinking, sea levels are rising, and that we all must, you know, pay more taxes because the summit's coming, and if we don't pay our taxes and agree to carbon taxes, well, these poor Pacific Islanders are suffering as a result of our evil capitalist intent, right? So this was the narrative that was being built down here in Australia in the last week. And even though most of the people now smell a rat, they don't believe the ideology, but I think the powers that be see the people's opinion is changing.
Exactly. And let me give you just one statistic on what they plan to do, what their goals are at this climate summit. They're intending by the year 2030 to reduce the extraction of coal and oil to zero. That means zero. They no more oil coming out, no more coal coming out. That doesn't mean they're going to do it, but that's their goal. While they're busy doing that now, trying to destroy these industries, at least in the United States, 67% of our energy currently comes from natural gas, oil, and coal. And if we are denied that kind of energy in our country, we will fall flat on our face, I hate to say. And in the meantime, these people are not proposing any other way to make up the energy deficit that they're creating. They have no plan. They have no technology. They have no idea on where they're going. And I heard Bill Gates in a conference a few days ago as well say that, well, what we need to do is have the government give more R&D money out to private companies to go figure it out. Yep. And at the end of his article, this was audacious. He said he's hoping for a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, my gosh. And I mean, this is lunacy, yeah. And this has led me to say, I think the inmates have taken over the asylum.
Mm. Well, you can see what they're aiming for and pushing for. They keep talking about how we need capital investment, and they're not going to private industry because private industry understands a lot of this is just pie in the sky. The technology isn't where the ideology says it should be. So what they are asking for is governments to subsidise that R&D, those R&D research under the name of, you know, CSIRO grants or whatever it might be. And I think this is what they're pushing for, Patrick, apart from carbon taxes, in a sense, penalising the people, teaching them they shouldn't use carbon, which, mind you, I want more of for my garden, right? My garden needs not lots more carbon dioxide. But right. apart from that, they're asking, pushing for this R&D money. Like, they're talking billions worldwide to try and develop systems that they don't have yet. But let's turn to our third story, mass immigration. An excellent article by Leo McKinstry on your site, mass immigration into Europe, and we could call that invasion, is on the verge of destroying Europe. Now, as we read through this article and look at the evidence on the ground, there's a German village of 102 people that is bracing for 750 asylum seekers. And the big thing about this, Patrick, apart from the actual cultural assault on the people, of Germany and Europe, apart from the cultural assault that this incredible wave of people from a different religion, different culture is going to bring, it's, of course, bypassing the will of the people. And the people are becoming restless, and there is more arson attacks, and you will find that you know, there'll be a lot more agitation on the ground. Another report, Islamic invasion pulls trigger. Europe now scrambles for guns. Austrians are arming themselves at record rates in an effort to defend their households against feared attacks from Muslim invaders. Tens of thousands of Muslim refugees have poured into Austria from Hungary and Slovenia in recent months on their way to Germany. Obtaining a working firearm and ammunition in Germany, Britain, Denmark and the Netherlands is practically impossible for the average citizen. So what's happening is, Patrick, there's a black market really being developed by people living in those countries that are fearful of this invasion.
This is a story that has so many different facets to it. I interviewed a lady from Europe today for an hour on for my upcoming Technocracy Hour, Technocracy Rising Hour radio program, and she lives close to Amsterdam in a small village, and she told me some of the stories and stuff that are coming out of it, firsthand stories, how she feels about it. She's in no way, you know, a radical type person at all. But what's really interesting about this invasion is the people coming in have refused to assimilate into the culture, into the target culture, absolutely refused. She said, by and large, the whole lot of them are arrogant and rude and have really no regard for basically for anybody else's, you know, rights at all. And she didn't equate this at all even to Islam. She just said, that's just the way it is. Nobody wants to deal with these people. And they refuse to learn English. She said there's even second-generation Moroccans that came many years ago who still don't speak their language. It's crazy. And the other thing that came up, too, is interesting, is a lot of these people coming in are young men. The women, the children, there are some, but not nearly as many as the men are coming in. So in Sweden, for instance, you have stories coming out of Sweden where gangs of young Muslim men are roaming the street looking for, I hate to say it this way, white girls to capture and rape. And there's been a number of gang rapes reported by these young Muslim men. This is absolute insanity culturally. It's breaking Europe apart at the seams.
It is. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that the Western bureaucracies, academia, and mass media have actually helped this along because of this doctrine of multiculturalism, no culture is better than another. In other words, you know, we aren't allowed to say we're proud of our white Australian heritage or United States heritage or whatever it might be. And so that by allowing other cultures to come in and not respect the culture they're coming into, in other words, assimilate, they've come with this attitude that everyone else owes them, right? And this is the big problem. As you've said, there's around 75%, 80% of these, of the influx of people are young men. And the article goes on and says a mood of fear hangs over disintegrating Europe. In southern Spain, there's been attacks on churches by Islamists, including damage to an ancient sanctuary and Arabic graffiti sprayed on walls. You spoke about the no-go zones. Now, these no-go zones aren't just in Sweden. There's places in England, London, all over where this has taken place at an escalating scale over the last decade, seeming to peak right now. I mean, the UN said that basically there is about 60 million people that are classified as refugees. Now, a lot of these people are coming out of Northern Africa, and it seems like Europe is set to disintegrate if something is not done very quickly.
Here's an interesting phenomenon, too, that goes along with this. There's a growing backlash in Europe right now against this whole thing. I know that people probably don't fully understand the overall political ramifications, how we got there. These, you know, the common guy on the street doesn't know who Peter Sutherland is, for instance, that really brought a lot of these policies to them. But we see a rise in nationalistic movements across Europe, not just in Germany. We see it, you know, you see it in Sweden, you see it in Holland, you see it in Great Britain. And you can't classify these people as a typical neo-Nazi type, you know, the skinheads or whatever. And I'm not sure every country is connected with every other country. But I've seen several stories recently that point out that nationalism is on the rise because of it.
And the thing is, Pat, I think that the powers that be are doing everything they can to link nationalism, for instance, to Adolf Hitler or any sort of negative overtones, so that nationalism is actually becoming, you know, a politically correct, you know, incorrect term today. You can't be a nationalist today. You must be a global citizen. And really, I think this ties into the whole technocracy where, you know, we are becoming ID'd as a number in the global community. We no longer will be citizens of Australia, for instance. And I really believe that this whole immigration invasion thing happening in Europe is a part of that plan to deconstruct national borders in people's minds and physically on the ground.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That we see that all over Europe. In fact, Peter Sutherland has been driving a lot of this policy in Europe. He openly chastises Europe for being the blame for everything going on. Yep. And it's like, excuse me? Yep. And this person I interviewed says, I said, well, how would you respond to a statement like that? She thought for me, she says, I'd like to slap him.
Mm. Yeah. Exactly. Now, just touching on that cultural thing before we go to our last story, for instance, in a Christian culture, I noticed that Denmark, there was people that had Muhammad cartoons in public, and the police told them they aren't allowed to display these cartoons anymore. And this is, once again, a symptom of what you're saying of the rise of the right, if you like. In other words, nationalist people saying, well, hang on, we're a Christian country, we're not a Muslim, but we see that the military and police and intelligence and bureaucracy and academia and the proletariat are basically clamping down on any form of nationalism, even in a protest, to say that, no, these people now, this is their culture. So it is a destruction of culture.
Yes, it really is. It really is. So it's interesting. I think the EU is sweating it a little bit right now. Mm-hmm. If they lose control of this, it will have very negative negative outcome for the EU and for the management that they've set up.
Well, once again, another story sent to me by one of our listeners down in Sydney. A Sydney street could be the first in Australia to go cashless. Now, once again, we've talked in the past about a cashless society, and the Bible talking about a time when no man would buy or sell unless he had the mark of the beast. In other words, technocracy must increase to the point where any transaction must be able to go through an electronic monitor. This story, it looks like any inner city Australian street, a pub on the corner, a row of old terraces, even somewhere you can grab a Thai curry. The laneway on the fringe of Sydney CBD might be modest, but what is happening here could dramatically affect the money we all have in our pockets. Kensington Street in Chippendale could be on the verge of a retail revolution, permanently banning payments in notes and coins by going fully cashless. And of course, this ties in with a trend worldwide was spoken about in the past. We saw wherever there's any sort of economic tremor, the banks are closing on the citizens. And from an article on GoldSeek, more and more countries are moving to ban cash transactions. More and more institutions are trying to make it harder to move your money into cash. The article goes on and says that globally, over $5 trillion in debt currently have negative yields in nominal terms. And it speaks about the reasons why there are institutions penalising people for using cash, which takes us to the Irish Times. The Bank of Ireland changes unnecessary, Noonan says. And this article talks about how the Bank of Ireland has imposed on over-the-counter lodgements and withdrawals surprising and unnecessary. And they are blocking staff from handling withdrawals less than 700 or lodgements of less than 3,000. It was a commercial decision of the bank. So, Patrick, what we see in Ireland, in the United States, down here in Australia, once again a test case, is this move to penalise people using cash and force them into the digital currency.
That's right. This is a global plan. You may be the first test case, I'm not sure, but one of the first. This is a global movement by the global banking community, and in particular, it's been a policy, I think a rather probably long-standing policy, of members of the Trilateral Commission, believe it or not. I hate to keep bringing their names back into it, but if the shoe fits, wear it, as they say. Mm-hmm. Trilateral Commissioner Robert Reich, an economist now, a former banker, he told CBS News not too long ago, quote, there will be a time, I don't know when, I can't give you a date, when physical money is just going to cease to exist, close quote. That's it. So we see this language all over the place. We know that the big banks are talking about it. They're trying to figure out a way to do it. One of the big problems is they're going to orphan about 25% of the economy in the United States if they do it. It may be more in Australia, it may be more in Africa, where they already don't have, you know, access to electronic stuff. But their idea very clearly is to get everybody on the digital system to push them into it. And I do believe that the whole excuse for, well, you know, it's money laundering. I mean, what if people are drug runners and they're laundering money in cash? You know, that's why we need to go cashless. That's nonsense. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. They want to do it because they want everybody into the digital system so they can get control over all the money in the world, which they do not have today.
And one of the interesting things in the article in Sydney, Patrick, was that basically no consumers objected. There is this conditioning process that's been going on now for a number of years. And we see big players like Apple Pay and other major corporations involved in this push because, of course, they get a percentage of all of these transactions through their systems. But the psychological conditioning of the population is what interests me, Pat. If we said this, 20 years ago, we were mad conspiracy theorists. Here it is. It's being implemented. The difference between what we're saying and, I guess, mass media is, as you have just stated, these facts are documented, that this is a long-term plan. And they've taken decades to condition the people. I have documented in the past that the Phoenix would be the digital currency implemented by 2018. In closing, have you seen any time periods that they have put on the implementation of this complete digital currency?
I really haven't. And even as Rice said, he can't give a date. I don't know if they have a date at this point, but they're pushing for it. And that means that there will be a date. There will be, eventually they'll push hard enough and they'll get it through. Exactly what it's going to look like, we still can't say what it's going to be. You know, a lot of people are talking about cryptocurrency today, like the Bitcoin and the Dogecoin, as being, you know, the future of it. But I'll tell you what, that's, right now it's not controlled by the global banking system. And they're not just going to walk away from their system of control.
No,
you know that.
No way. They'll come after all those cryptocurrencies and any ability for us to trade peer-to-peer. But, Pat, you have a new radio show. Talk to us in closing about your new radio show. Is it going to be archived so we can listen to the podcast?
Everyone will be archived, in fact. It's going to air live 7 to 8 Pacific Coast time in the United States, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. People can listen to it on talknetwork.com. And they just go there. They'll see my name there. If they want, they can click on it. But just by going to the website at 7 o'clock Pacific time, they will hear the stream right there. It'll just appear. They don't have to do anything. They'll just hear it.
Well, great work. And we wish you well with that. And until next time, Pat, thank you.
You're totally welcome.